life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
Broadcasting from the Mayhem Mood, it's Dynamite in the Brain with your host Brian Smith, and today I'm joined by Bradley Meek to discuss a trio of tiger masks. Hello, Bradley.
Hello.
Hello, indeed. So yes, we have picked the first three episodes of each of the Tiger Mask anime to talk about this week. That is Tiger Mask from October 1969, Tiger Mask 2 from April 1981, and Tiger Mask Double. Or Tiger Mask W, but it's pronounced double. October 2016. And so, Bradley, before we hop in, is this your first experience with these, Bradley? Or have you seen some of these before?
I watched the first episode of Tiger Mask Double years ago.
Yeah, quite possibly.
But I never watched any more than that. Yeah, back when I kept up with simulcasts.
Yes.
Not anymore at the moment. But this, the rest of it, is new to me. So it's interesting to watch, the roots of an icon, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely iconic, particularly that first series. I think we'd watched the first two Tiger Masks first episodes for Dynamite in the Brain previously. I can't remember in what context at this point. But we definitely had. But I hadn't watched any further, which is why I was just as surprised as you to find that the second episode we watched was in Italian.
Yes.
But obviously, and also for Let's Go, I'd watched the entirety of Tiger Mask Double on a weekly basis. Through VPN, because it's not available in the UK. But it is on Crunchyroll, if you want to watch. So, of the things we're talking about, the only thing you can watch all of is Tiger Mask Double in English. There are three episodes fan-subbed of Tiger Mask. And technically are fan-subbed, and technically they're in English.
But that words are in English. The sentences are kind of a stretch to say they're in English.
They are, yes. And there's 25 episodes of Tiger Mask Double fan-subbed. They're by the same group, but I think different translators.
Yeah. Tiger Mask 2 has noticeably better translations, but it's still a little garbled.
Yeah, the typesetting is a little bit better. But it still has a few of the group's foibles of when somebody's shouting, let's just blow that font right up. annoyingly, I was looking for a clip for a music video I was thinking of doing, and it was the very next episode of the ones which were subtitled. But I managed to track it down, as I managed to track down all of the original Tiger Mask as well, unsubtitled. I think it had at one point been on the New Japan World site for a limited period, but I may be getting that mixed up with Kinnikuman. Kinnikuman for sure was on there for a little bit. The other big wrestling show that inspired children all over Japan to become wrestlers. Such as a wrestler who will come up later. I know he was inspired by Kinnikuman rather than Tiger Mask. But let's start talking about the original Tiger Mask from October 1969. If you were watching this that very week, you also had starting Sasae-san, the very first Moomin anime, and the Genie family. And you also had the latest episodes of Akko-chan and Star of the Giants. So really, you were sorted in 1969 for quality anime. There was one of the show, which I can't remember the name of, and you wouldn't have recognised, so I did not mention it. But, yeah, the majority of shows that week were big, iconic shows that have stood the test of time. Had multiple sequels or remakes. And the good news from this week, as we're recording, is that Viz have picked up the 2020 Genie family. So there's a good chance that's going to show up on Crunchyroll shortly. due to the Viz Crunchyroll deal.
Nice.
Have you seen any of these, Bradley?
I've seen like the first episode of Star of the Giants.
Yeah.
I've same probably here. Seen some Moomin. I'm pretty sure that was on TV when I was a kid. Sazae-san and Akko-chan, I know of, but I don't think I've seen any of them.
Yeah, we watched, it's the second, the 80s Akko-chan. We watched one of the movies for our Toei Manga Matsuri reviews. And we watched the first episode of Star of the Giants when we did our anime blind spot, because that's the only fan subbed episode. Which is super frustrating because it is an absolutely cracking first episode. We've watched the first episode of Moomin. And it wasn't immediately obvious in that one as why Tove Jansson was so annoyed at this particular version of Moomin. And I do have the first season of Sazae-san unsubtitled. And I have watched a 2010s episode. There was a single episode somebody fan-subbed. The modern-day version of it is snooze-inducing. It's a thing to make Sunday evenings drag on longer. The original first year of it is absolutely fantastic in terms of its animation. Really wild, cartoony animation. Lots of it. It's kind of the thing about how, because it was seen as like very left wing, the original comic was, and it's definitely a thing of like how time progresses. What used to be anti-establishment becomes the establishment, just naturally over time.
Yeah, as it becomes an institution.
Yeah.
In its own cell. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's well worth seeking out the animation because they put up a bunch of it on Amazon Prime in Japan. So I think that was the loophole through which, because it's never been released on DVD due to the non-merchandising rules the author put into the contract. But yeah, HD versions went up on Amazon. And yeah, it's beautiful looking stuff. I wish all of this stuff was available in English from 1969. Because I think the 69 and 68, there's a lot of good stuff, but that might be a podcast topic for another day.
Yeah.
Staff from this show, Tiger Mask, also worked on things around this time, such as Sabu and Ichi's Arrest Note, Maretsu Ataro, the aforementioned Himetsu no Akko-chan, and the 71 Kitaro continuation. So mainly, I think they were all Toei stuff. Certainly the last three are. Maretsu Ataro is another one where I really want to see that. But that's another Atsuka show. And obviously, there's plenty of Ikki Kajiwara, the author of the Tiger Mask comic adaptation, such as the aforementioned Star of the Giants and Tomorrow's Joe being the other big one. But just look him up. There's so many. We'd take up massive amounts of the podcast just mentioning everything he ever wrote. So let's get into episode one. I forgot to write that. This is Brian's still got his bad habit of not writing the episode titles down. Okay, episode
one. I don't
think
it had a title.
It may not have any episode titles. Show. Yeah, I will have a look.
Yeah.
In the meantime. But we meet in this very first episode three guys at an airport, and they're planning to ambush the legendary American heel wrestler known as Tiger Mask, a.k.a. the Yellow Devil. They are Hurricane Hill, Iron Bear, and I didn't catch the third guy's name. It's a cowboy, a Russian, and another guy.
I thought Hill was the cowboy. But,
he is.
Hill is
the cowboy. Iron Bear's, I assume, the Russian, based on his name. I can't remember the other guy's name. The other guy's the one who gets beaten up first, I think.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of cartoon baristas who are shuddering in fear, and they look like they're out of an entirely different cartoon than the other three guys. And that's the point where I was like, I'm going to love this cartoon because it just does not care about maintaining consistent style. I should also say, let me find the website. I should have put in the notes. There's a long standing English fan site for all things Tiger Mask. Heitora.com. Heitora.com. And they have like pictures of what they look like in the cartoon and in the comic, and the character designs are pretty different in the cartoon to what they are in the comic. It's a bit like how the style of Shin-Chan evolved over time to looking less and less like what Shin-Chan looked like. They're almost like caricatures of cartoons. Or in some cases, they look entirely different, as we'll get to with episode 2. This guy apparently has been wrestling in New York, which I guess means he was part of the WWE. But before they could ambush him, some real wrestlers show up from the JWA. And they notice, the guys notice, he's got huge shoes. And they look up, oh, it's Giant Baba. And these are inviting Tiger Mask to Japan are Giant Baba, Michiaki Yoshimura, and Antonio Inoki. Don't think Inoki gets any... he does in the second episode because he's tag-teaming with him, yeah.
Yeah, and these are real wrestlers for listeners who are not as familiar with Japanese wrestling. They don't... I think outside of Giant Baba, though, they don't quite look like their real-life counterparts.
No, they don't. And I wonder whether that is... And I'm not even sure they call it JWA in the cartoon, which may be why I wrote JPW down. I wonder whether there was a concern about likenesses.
I guess, but you kind of give the game away when you just say their names.
I know. That thought did not occur to me till the second episode, when I was like, that guy's got a bigger chin than Inoki. What's going on here?
And Inoki already has a pretty prominent chin.
But what are you drawing a guy with a bigger chin when you've got Inoki in the ring, particularly when that guy is not known for a big chin? And then we get a blood splatter appears on the screen to intro us into a montage of Tiger Mask's dirty wrestling. And this is kind of where you get like this is the thing which made Tiger Mask big in terms of a visual figure. It's great that he's as a design, he's great. He's a guy with a mask, which makes him. It's not like the actual Tiger Mask wrestlers, because obviously when they tried to do the Tiger Mask double wrestler more recently with Kota Ibushi wearing the mask as it is in the cartoon, they discovered that you can't actually wrestle in that sort of mask.
Yeah, you need to give the wrestler space to breathe.
I think it is the issue. I think it was the issue Kota Ibushi had, is it kept on slipping and then he couldn't see because of the eye holes in it.
But I do love how part of the design is his head just becomes a tiger's head,
yes.
Right? It has all the proportions with how the mouth of the tiger and the jaws and everything is a three-dimensional just mask, which is a really cool effect. And they use it later for some villains as well. So it's almost like a part of the design of Tiger Mask and any other masked villain or hero is to have the mask just become a face.
Yeah. But where we get this wrestling scene is the thing which elevates it further than just the design, is it presents wrestling almost in the abstract, where the ring seems to exist as big and as small as it needs to be. When you're seeing stuff in the ring, you're not seeing the crowds. Instead, you cut to the crowds separate to the ring. And it's got that sort of diamond-like shot, the way they shoot wrestling in Japan as well, rather than the flat way they shoot it in the US.
It's a gorgeous episode, by the way. My goodness, it looks so good, even nowadays. I especially love how the camera spins around the ring.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of just wild movement that are almost like when a student in animation is studying how bodies move. So all the wrestlers, their bodies will kind of contort or twist around as the camera is twisting at the same time. It kind of creates a really cool effect. You can see how this would stand out in television.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. And then, yeah, when you see that first episode of Star of the Giants as well, it's like, yeah, it's super inspirational. I wonder how easy it was to do. Because there's the visual things, which I've seen people do it, but they don't do it as consistently as they seem to do it in these early Tiger masks.
Yeah, and they're not reusing a lot of footage either.
No. And the part of the way they cut around that is by having a lot of static crowd shots,
Yes.
but
Yes.
they're still a joy because it's clear there's no sheet to show you how to draw people in the crowd. They just seem to get to draw whatever they like in the crowd. Possibly multiple artists all having a go on the background at the same time. Because yeah, there's a whole wild variation of humanity coming to see the wrestling, which I guess is fairly true to when you do go and see the wrestling. Nobody talking all the way through it though, thankfully, unlike real life. Always seem to get stuck behind those people. And then, as this is happening, Tiger Mask is explaining to Giant Barber how a heel will draw money here. So, yes, I do all these terrible, dirty things, but that will make people, they'll hate me so much they'll want to come in and see the chance that I might lose.
Yeah, I kind of love the way that this series and another series we'll talk about integrates kayfabe without really breaking it,
Yeah.
So it understands wrestling and the wrestling business. But you could also, as a kid, just take it at face value and it still makes sense.
Yeah, there's a moment here where the crowds then seem to be into his sadism, but in the next two episodes, it seems to be like the majority of the crowds still hate his guts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of what also happens with heels in general,
That
right?
is true,
Is
yes.
at some point they just become cool. I think, especially when you're a kid, I think part of the appeal of heels is you get to see somebody break the rules and get away with it. That's a lot of
It's
fun.
definitely the appeal to a certain kid as we cut to an orphanage. And they're arguing about Tiger Mask, and this one kid, Kenta, is a massive fan of Tiger Mask. I believe as the series will go on, this is where he decides to become a baby face, is when he sees the effect of his dastardly behavior on this little kid and
Yeah.
realizes, I can't be this bad influence. I've got to become a baby face. And as I was watching this, having just as working my way through the Yakuza games, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure the orphanage in Yakuza 3 is this orphanage, particularly like the layout of the kids' room, down to like the types of shelving they've got.
Oh, yeah. I could see it.
And Yakuza 3 has Kiryu dress up as a wrestler, a masked wrestler. Does the other guy wear a tiger? Oh, no, he's a snake. God, that's his tattoo. I've just got to Yakuza 5 where he brings out his wrestling mask again to help a 60-year-old wrestler have his last match. And he's like, I better put this mask on so nobody figures out who I am. Cut to the ring where he's bare-backed. He's got a massive tattoo.
Yakuza is such a joy.
It is, yeah. And I always find when I'm watching it and I'll playing it, I'll say something and then like a moment later a character will say the same thing. And I was like, that's how you know it's so perfectly written, is it leads you to the same thoughts the characters are about to have. And then we Giant Barber has some sources where he tells us that Tiger Mask came from a place called Tiger's Cave, a secret gym for creating evil wrestlers out of orphans. And
I guess this sets up like some of the lore that kind of goes through all of Tiger Mask, right? So
it does, yeah.
Tiger Mask is always fighting against the other wrestlers from Tiger Cave, who are sent by some evil big bad. Here it kind of feels like a tokusatsu show to some extent.
It does, yeah. I think it will feel much more like that when Mr. X shows up and starts delivering all sorts of weirdos to defeat Tiger Mask. Meanwhile, we check back in at the orphanage where the two adults who are running it remember a Naoto Date. And just before the orphanage was to be, who they were used to be in an orphanage with, and just before their orphanage was about to be closed, the kids were taken to a zoo. Where he learned that tigers are stronger than lions, and so therefore he declares that he will become a tiger. And then three quote-unquote teenagers, they appear to be adults in school uniforms, show up to bully them, because in this world, orphans are the lowest of the low, and everybody bullies them. And so Naoto beats the shit out of them. This small child just absolutely lays waste to them. And so that this is why they're pondering as to whether could this Tiger Mask be our old friend Naoto Date? Because, hey, he'd be about the same age as Tiger Mask is. And we are. Meanwhile, back at the show, or another show, and a wrestler previously injured by Tiger Mask has brought his son to watch Hurricane Hill, or possibly Bill, the subtitles switch from Hill to Bill at this point, to beat up Tiger Mask. This does not happen, because Tiger Mask is really good at wrestling, and he's very dirty. Dismayed at this inability to see his father avenged, the child leaps into the ring to fight Tiger Mask himself. Which causes Tiger Mask to have a good hard look at himself, but not so hard that he does anything about it in the next two episodes. But
yeah. But it is kind of building his character here in an interesting way, isn't it?
It is. I like the fact that they clearly tell you who he is, even though the other characters haven't quite worked it out yet. And he's a guy who appears to be in it for money. We don't know what his relationship is with this Tiger's Cave currently, but we know Tiger's Cave exists. He's mainly fighting other heels at this point. So, yeah, you could see why the kids like him and why the adults would go, he's a bad influence. Boo to you, Tiger Mask.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the mother figure in the orphanage also keeps commenting on how these wrestling matches are just so violent.
Yes.
They're too violent. Which, it is kind of a crazy violent cartoon.
It is. It is arguably more violent than any actual real wrestling match would be. But particularly the next episode, I just remember what happens.
It's not the most violent thing we'll see in these nine episodes, no, but it's up there.
It is. It's kind of feasibly violent. when we get to Tiger Mask 2, feasibility has been thrown out the window. Episode 2 lines up the match we're going to see this episode. And that's another good thing 2 and 3 do, is they basically tell you at the start of the episode what the match is going to be that you're going to get at the end of the episode.
Yes. I really like that structure.
And in this one, you're going to have Tiger Mask tag teaming with Antonio Inoki versus Jack Briscoe tag teaming with Baron, and my Maltese is not good enough, Scicluna. Another
this is
real
me shrugging.
Yeah, these are all real wrestlers again. So it's like a Incredible Partners match where you've got a heel and a baby face on each side. Because that will really draw the interest. It seemed maybe a little too soon, but I guess Tiger Mask has been tearing up for a week or so. We'll see who's been going around the country doing the spots. And people have heard about him and want to see him.
Yeah, and presumably he already was a superstar in America.
Yes, so people have heard about him in the sports press.
Yes.
Kenta buys a tiger mask at a festival. It's one of those little plastic things, which whenever I see, I always hated them as a kid, even though I'd want them and then hate them as soon as I got them.
Yeah, they don't seem comfortable to wear.
They're never comfortable. And they just steam up immediately. They're just really hot and uncomfortable.
But they're great in anime because you can pause the screen and then try and find all the references and all the other masks.
Yes. Yeah, there's a whole bunch in this one, isn't there? They're like all the other Toei shows are around this time.
Yes.
Then they're going to have like a party at the orphanage, and while they're having a party, a grown man wanders up and insults the orphans, and then beats them up because orphans have it too good.
Yeah, they're on the goal. They're on the dole. They need to go out and work for a living. Jeez.
And this leaves Kenta feeling powerless because he couldn't beat this man who was bullying his friends. And but then he sees the show's going on and he sneaks in. And the security guard's like, "Oi, kid, where do you think you're going?" And he legs it, but he legs it right into Tiger Mask's clutches, who lifts him above his head and laughs before running off with the child.
Oh, but he's just running off with him to let him into the show.
That is correct, yes. I do like the befuddled look of the security guard as he's sitting on the floor. Okay. What's going on?
Well, it's not like you can tell him to stop. It's Tiger Mask.
Exactly. They beat you up. Don't mess with him.
Exactly.
Then we get the match. Somehow, Jack Briscoe has a bigger chin than Inoki. Jack Briscoe, if you look him up on his Wikipedia page, he does not look anything like his appearance in this cartoon.
Nope.
There's like a tension between them, and it ends up with Tiger Mask against the Baron, and Tiger Mask grabs the judges' table, brings it into the ring, and unlike modern day, when you think, oh, they're going to suplex him or powerbomb him through the table, no, Tiger Mask just lifts the table up and bludgeons the Baron with it.
Smashes him over the head. So good.
And then, rather than pin him, starts dancing on him.
Oh, he just dances on him until he gets DQ'd for kicking too much ass.
Yes. Yeah, the Baron has turned blue in the face and has drool coming out his mouth at this point. Meanwhile, back at the orphanage, they're wondering where Kenta is. And then they see him on the telly, watching the wrestling. And then we go back to the match. At this point, I was like, oh, is it 2 out of 3 falls? Did they ever mention that?
I think they did in the garbled translation we read. But, yeah, it's hard to parse.
Inoki's mad at Tiger Mask for getting them disqualified on the first fall. And so he and Briscoe wrestle fairly. But he gets caught in the Baron's corner, and then we cut to Tiger Mask, and he's basically doing Naito's tranquilo pose.
Yes.
on their corner. Which I might make the show banner for the website, because I think it was my favourite picture of all three shows. It just somehow, it's a smug, I think it's because the mouth's closed in that picture, whereas it's normally wide open and mean. And Inoki manages to submit the Baron, and which leads to Jack Briscoe scolding Tiger Mask for not being able to stay on the same side with his teammate. Why didn't you come and help your teammate out earlier when he was caught in the corner?
Now, does Tiger Mask know what a tag match is, or did that come up later? And was that just double?
I think that's just double, where he doesn't know. He hadn't prepared for a tag match at all. So then the Baron ends up going on a bucket. He's attacking Inoki, but then Briscoe gets in the way, and so Tiger Mask grabs the buckets and saves Briscoe. And then, while Briscoe and his partner are brawling, oh, he's being sarcastic because he's saying the same thing back to that Briscoe had said to him about Inoki not being able to get on. Tiger Mask just KOs the ref. It's worse than modern day New Japan. Well, maybe not. There was a spot we'll get to when we talk about Saturday's New Japan show that maybe this was a better ref bump spot than that one. Where Tiger Mask, he just KOs the ref, and then he throws the buckets in the air and then drop kicks himself into the buckets, one bucket each foot.
Yes.
And takes out the tag team.
You see the buckets falling and then Tiger Mask going faster than the buckets until he connects like it's a he's a combining robot with the buckets and knocks both of them out in one kick.
This feels like a scene that you assume everybody in wrestling has kept Kota Ibushi from ever seeing. There's certain things that go through my mind about Kota Ibushi. It's like when Jericho did his first cruise, I was like, for Kota Ibushi's sake, don't let him get on that boat. Because he's going to want to do a move off the boat. So when I saw that bucket spot, I was like, it's probably good that physics don't work that way. That I don't think you could get... You maybe could get one bucket, but to get both buckets, I think it would be tricky. Kenta is absolutely delighted at this carnage. Can't remember who wins the match. Or if we even see it, because the heads of the orphanage show up to bring Kenta home. But when Tiger Mask runs into them, he runs away. I was assuming because he recognized them, but when he gets back, he's like, I think I recognize that lady.
I interpreted it more as he thought he recognized her, but he wasn't sure, and that kind of caused him to look in the mirror and think back on his life. Another moment of self-doubt. Am I really doing the right thing here? You know?
Yeah. It's meaningless as to who actually won the match. I assume it must be a DQ all round because the referee's knocked out at that point. Episode 3, we're promised Tiger Mask versus the Terrible Monster, who I believe is a made-up-for-the-show wrestler. Because I looked up, I even went to Cage Match, and... is it Cage Match? What's the Cage Fight, is it? I can't remember the database page.
Oh, yeah.
For the wrestling.
Cage Match.
And I was like, who are all the terrible wrestlers? Not the terrible wrestlers, but the wrestlers who are terrible in their name. And there's only one around the time, and he looks nothing like this guy. So, I don't think he's in. And I did check that other website I mentioned, and he's not mentioned there either. So, this time Naoto Date visits the orphanage as himself, not as he hasn't been there at all as Tiger Mask. But this is the episode we get most of him outside of being Tiger Mask of these threes. And the orphanage has seen better days, and Kenta is being a little shit. And then a bunch of gangsters show up to force the orphans out. This was, again, very Yakuza 3.
They even brought some machinery to start knocking down the orphanage.
Yeah, and they're going to build a...
Or maybe I am confusing that with Yakuza 3.
I can't remember if they bought like shovels and stuff because they end up hitting each other with them. But they explain they're going to knock it down and build a motel for truckers. At least according to the subtitles we watched.
Which is delightfully specific. That's a great way to make money too, I'm sure.
Yes. So he probably is actually the thing, because that's a plot point in Keep Your Hands Off Aizouken. Is that the convenience store is seeing hard times because it's no longer accessible to the truckers who used to keep it afloat.
That's right, yeah, because there was the a new highway was built.
Yeah,
right.
Kenta bites the thug, the one who's in charge, and then we get Naoto Date. He's totally Clark Kent in it in this next bit because Because at first, the lady and head of the orphanage is trying to stop Naoto from fighting them, because she's like, this guy, he's probably Tiger Mask, and if he fights these poor men, they're going to really suffer for it. But rather than fight them like Tiger Mask, he fights it like Clark Kent would in a good Superman comic, in that he acts like a bumbling fool, and all the gangsters end up beating each other up because of his bumbling. It's a pretty good sequence.
Yeah.
For an episode which is fairly light on the actual wrestling. There's a lot of circular conversation, though, about whether or not he should pay off the loan before he pays off the loan that they took. Because it's like, well, they didn't make the loan with these gangsters. These gangsters have just been hired by the man they made the loan with. The story would move a lot quicker if these were the guys you made the loan with.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the orphanage saved. I assume the orphanage will need saving multiple times between the 100+ episodes we have.
Yeah, it's this episode kind of dragged, I think, because it takes a while to get to the wrestling after what is at this point feels like a fairly routine storyline about having your hero save some poor orphans. And the actual match, which I think was advertised as a hardcore match against the Terrible Monster, wasn't really much after the excellent first two matches we saw.
Yeah, his thing is that he's got a really hard head.
Yes. He's got Maki Ito's superpowers.
Yes. Takayama. That was his thing. Of having a really hard... Or Homer Simpson. Well, many people known with really hard heads. Or at least these are all non-racist examples of wrestlers with really hard heads. Because in order to avoid having to deal with this really hard head, Tiger Mask just pokes him in the eye.
Yes. I forgot about that, yes.
He's still fighting dirty. And then also watching on the TV, a letter arrives, packed with cash, and a letter from Naoto saying, "Here's the money for your loan." And they're like, "Wow, he wasn't lying about his inheritance." Well, he is lying about his inheritance. And then Naoto Date just drives off in giant Baba's car.
That was an odd way to end. Yeah. Wait, does that mean? Hang on. Maybe that means that the car he was driving earlier was not his car. That was some other wrestler's car he just took. So maybe he's not actually that rich.
Yeah, I think he's not actually. I think he's just giving them all the payoffs for the wrestling.
This is all the money he's been earning. He otherwise lives in poverty. I didn't quite think of that. I guess that's why they had to point out, no, that's not actually his car at the end.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's surprising how little we get to. Oh, sorry. Go on ahead.
But the suggestion is that he knows. Does Baba know that he's Date? Because that seems to be high. It was weird. It was that last moment was like really weird.
It is.
Unless that car at the time, maybe Giant Baba was famous for driving that particular car at the time, and it's all a gag which worked really well in 1969. And doesn't work now. Because I could see that being... I could see there being a open-top sports car which got Giant Baba to advertise it because of his height.
That makes sense, too.
That was all generally my suspicion on these sort of things. It's a reference I don't get. And has not been aged well. And it's been a while since Tumblr has been full of Giant Baba pictures for me. Because for a while there, that seemed to be all the only thing which would appear on Tumblr for me was pictures of Giant Baba.
That's a pretty good Tumblr feed right there.
It is. It's a pleasant surprise.
I was surprised how little we got into the first three episodes, getting to some of the larger Tiger Mask story. Yeah. Like, we don't see him turn face in these three episodes. He's still a dastardly heel, even though he seems to have his doubts. And we don't really get into his origin story with the Tiger's Cave, and none of the evil wrestlers from the Tiger's Cave show up at all.
No, they don't. I was going to see if I can find an episode list to get any sort of clue as to when this sort of thing would have happened. Okay. Let's try that again. All that's done is switch it to the mobile view. This is exciting radio, folks. A man trying to look up episode titles. Okay, let's zap that wide open. English. Trap of the Tiger Hole. Oh, episode 4 is where it starts, in fact. The Lore of the Tiger Hole is episode 4. So I assume we'd get into that later. And then Dead Tiger, Horror Death Match, Bloody Tiger, Trap of the Tiger Hole. Yeah, it sounds like we're probably going to get 5 in a row there, which were all Tiger's Cave related.
Well, there we go then. It's kind of a slow start though, but I didn't mind at all. This is, as much as it kind of feels like an artifact of its time, it's still pretty entertaining to watch nowadays.
Yeah, I agree.
If you don't mind the dated style.
It's super strong. And yeah, obviously Yuasa has used this style to a degree in Kimono Zume and Kickheart for sure.
Oh yeah, the spinning around of the camera I mentioned, that really reminds me of Kickheart now that you mention it.
But I'm trying to think of anybody else who... I'm sure there's other examples. There's probably a Pokemon Sun and Moon episode which looks exactly like it. Because isn't there like a masked... Oh, that's in the new one, isn't it? There's like a masked wrestler Pokemon. So it'll be in the current...
No, I think that was Sun and Moon. Not Sword and Shield, the current one.
I don't know. I
because of Smash Brothers. I think it came... Well, yeah, he wasn't masked, right, though, but he was a professional wrestling Pokemon.
Yeah, I think there is one now which looks like a luchador. I only know these things based on the Comedy Bang Bang character Dash Grab'em, which revolves around somebody playing an Ash Ketchum star character explaining Pokemon to a bunch of other comedians who know nothing about Pokemon.
That sounds like an extremely good bit.
It is a really good bit, yeah. I think the first appearance...
Well, if Anthony was here, he could help us with that
bit. He could, yeah. Well, he's busy killing Sekiro over and over again, so... He's not. He's trying to go for... What's he going for at the moment? A hitless run, that's it. He's done his deathless run. He's trying to go for a hitless run now.
Jeez.
Yeah. these Dark Souls Sekiro players take it much more seriously than I take any video game.
Well, there's a certain degree of sadism to it too.
It is, particularly because they've invented like all their own. It's not something like necessarily built into the game. They've all they've framed extra rules around it so they can get even more out of it. But yes, you can watch out. If you're missing Anthony, you can find him on Twitch at AntAskew. Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays tend to be when he's playing Sekiro all the time. we'll see. He has occasionally promised that he, well, not promised, suggested that he might do Fall Guys at some point. Moving on to the next Tiger Mask, though. It's Tiger Mask 2. And we start off with... Scrolling down. Let's see what you could have watched this week as well as Tiger Mask. Also starting that week, you had The Queen of a Thousand Years, the Leiji Matsumoto anime. And you also had new episodes of Lightan, Dr. Slump, Belle and Sebastian, and also Astro Boy, Tetsujin number 28, and Tomorrow's Joe 2, because 1981 was one of those periods when there were a lot of remakes and sequels to anime. I think 80-81 is the thing. It's one of those periods because it was like they just come off the boom caused by the Yamato film. Then you start getting all the anime magazines being published. But then I think they were like, oh, we've run out. We don't have time to develop new ideas. So let's just bring back things people liked from around the same time as the Yamato TV show.
Yeah.
And...
But a lot of those are also still great shows. I've seen some of Dr. Slump. I've seen some of that 1981 Astro Boy. I don't think I've seen Tetsujin number 28 or Tomorrow's Joe 2, though.
No, Tomorrow's Joe 2 was up on Crunchyroll for a while under Champions Road, is that what it's called?
Something like that, yeah. I'd been meaning to watch it, but they never had the first Tomorrow Joe in its entirety.
Yeah, that is the issue.
Yeah.
And this was to promote the debut of Satoru Sayama as a real-life Tiger Mask.
Oh, okay, so I was confused on this point, because he debuted in, like, spring of 1982, which would have been after this show finished.
Yes. Although 81, he made his way to the ring as Tiger Mask. April 81, so it was around the same month as this.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so it was concurrent.
It was concurrent, yes.
I had looked it up in Cage Match, and I thought he had debuted afterwards.
But I don't think he uses any... He doesn't wrestle like this Tiger. Ironically, Tiger Mask Double wrestles more like Sayama than Tiger Mask 2 does.
Yeah.
But yeah, he'd just come back from England, was it? As Sammy Lee and Mexico. To debut as this. This is your character for the kid. This will get the kids in the seats. And then repeated to further great success as Jushin Liger in the 90s. Jushin Liger's is even odder, where his costume would change as the robot changed in the cartoon.
Yeah, which is a gimmick that I love. But that's just my... I'm always a sucker for anything like a tokusatsu superhero, and... Of course, Thunder Liger getting all kinds of different Ligers just rules.
Yes.
That doesn't really happen with Tiger Mask, it seems. He's just always Tiger Mask. He doesn't have a violent tiger or anything like
Black
that.
Black Tiger's the arch enemy in, I think, in all of them. Well, definitely one and Double. Oh, except there's an even worse one in Tiger Double. But there was a Black Tiger gimmick to go against Sayama's, which is... Was that Mark Rockable Rocco under the mask, I believe? Yes, who just passed away. Yeah, so the British wrestler Mark Rocco played Black Tiger in this period.
Oh, okay. Okay, interesting. I know Rocky Romero did the latest incarnation of Black Mask, of Black Tiger Mask, right?
Yeah, Black Tiger, yeah. And then during the Double, ACH portrayed Tiger the Dark.
Yeah.
I can't remember who played the other guy they brought in, though, for those promotional videos, the promotional matches, rather.
They had Red Mask.
They did. I'm trying to remember who
played
it. We
should probably talk about all this after, actually.
Yeah. So, similar staff to this, around the same time you had Video Senshi, Lazarion, and Captain Future. I've seen some of Captain Future. It is also pretty good. It's probably better than Tiger Mask 2, what I've seen of Tiger Mask 2. Hmm. And you've got a bunch of staff coming back from the original. I think most notably the director's a producer. The director of the first series is a producer on this one. Or planning. Yeah, Takeshi Tamiya is on the planning of this show. And we open up as we're hanging out with some sports journalists. We've got Tetsuo, and I can't remember any of the names. Who's the photographer's name?
The girl of the show. I don't know.
Yes, the girl of the show. Yes, I forgot her name. And then there's a rival love interest Yeah, these feel very Clark Kent and Lois Lane, and God, I can't remember the jerk from around this time in Superman when they're all working at the TV station. I think he used to be like the sports guy at the Daily Planet as well.
Yeah, I don't know my Superman well enough to
help.
No,
I don't remember all these names, but it's super. I mean, as much as Darte's Clark Kent in episode 2 with this is.
Yeah, this feels very influenced by superheroes in a way that the first series did not.
And it would be, because this is the thing I think people forget, is because the long tail of the influence of Star Wars is so much longer, mm-hmm. but I think people forget just how popular that Christopher Reeve Superman movie was. And I bet that's what they're playing into here. With these types
there's
of characters.
Some of that. There's also a lot of Spider-Man.
There is, particularly with the second episode. And their editor is much more J. Jonah Jameson than Perry White.
Yes.
He's much sleazier than Perry White ever was. So they're at judo tourney when it's interrupted by Outer Space Mask, who wants to rule Earth Wrestling. And has come here to challenge Antonio Inoki, Earth's greatest wrestler. And the heavyweight champion of judo tries to attack Outer Space Mask, but Tatsuo stops him. And after all this has resolved itself, after Outer Space Mask bids them farewell, the champion comments about how strong Tatsuo was, which seems opposite of his personality so far. How could this mild-mannered sports reporter be so strong? Inoki, however, refuses to accept this guy's challenge. I was like, can this really be Antonio Inoki? Surely he would not pass up the opportunity to prove the power of Earth martial arts.
Yeah, wrestling an alien is absolutely the kind of goofy
yes.
shit. Oh, and I think it's worth saying here that while the animation in the first Tiger Mask is kind of wild and distinctive, this is a little more conventional, but it still looks really good.
Yes.
And the fights, if anything, are a lot more heightened. Yes. So Outer Space Mask falls from the sky, basically, and lands on his feet, and as we'll see later on, he's basically able to fly through the ring. We're kind of into superpower territory here.
Yeah, there's lots of great facial characterization on the characters as well. And we get wrestler Sakaguchi, who I assume is supposed to be Seiji Sakaguchi based on the time period. And he gets beaten up by... this is a New Japan show. He gets beaten up by Outer Space Mask. And a kid who's a big Sakaguchi fan is like, I can't have this, and invades the ring. But Outer Space Mask is having none of this and just hurls the kid into the air.
Yes. Until he is rescued by a shadowy figure. Who could it possibly be?
Who could it possibly be entering the arena to Tiger Mask's music?
Yes, Tiger Mask is back. We didn't mention this, but Tiger Mask died at the end of the first series.
This is
so...
the thing. I'm not like. Let me. I do have the episode because this is the issue. I'm not sure whether he does die or whether this is a thing they put in this series.
Okay.
It's a point of contention because when we get to Tiger Mask Double considers Tiger Mask 2 not to exist.
Yes, it's not canon for Tiger Mask Double.
Yeah. I guess it would be... But even though this also... Yeah, it's not canon, and yet it is influenced by it as well. That's the weird thing. Yeah, so I'm not sure. I also think, like, maybe it's in the anime and not the comic. I think it's hard to get a grip on it, particularly when we're only talking about 9 episodes worth, and there's 105 episodes of Tiger Mask. The original. But yeah, it does feel like a retcon as we're talking about superhero comics, particularly once we get to Tiger Mask's origin, which is definitely feels like a massive retcon in terms of like rearranging history. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll let that play in the background while we continue to talk about this. But yes, everyone's discussing, but Tiger Mask's dead. Tiger Mask was that guy, Naoto Date, who died saving an orphan. So who could this be? And they ordered the referee to adjudicate their match. And it's very fair until Outer Space Mask teleports and then headbutts Tiger Mask from the top of the stadium repeatedly.
Yes. Oh, and I noted here that unlike what I've seen of the first Tiger Mask, this new Tiger Mask actually does take bumps and sell, to use the terminology. But he's actually having a hard time of this to start with. Until just as at a 2.99 count from the ref, he finally wakes up and reverses the whole thing. With a Cobra Clutch that even Antonio Inoki, who's watching the match on TV, has to admit is better than his own.
Yeah, I believe the death is a total retcon for this.
Okay.
Because the original TV series appears to end with him hopping on an aeroplane and leaving Japan.
Okay. So they need to explain why there's a new Tiger Mask and, well... the older hero dying seems to be a classic of cartoons about this time. So
yeah. Also, it helps separate the kids who are watching it now. It's like, I'm not watching my big brother's Tiger Mask. This is my Tiger Mask made for me.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, Outer Space Mask apparently has come from the Space Wrestling Federation, which is run by a definitely not Tigerjeet Singh, and what appears to at this point to be a talking statue behind a curtain. Mm-hmm.
Again, strong tokusatsu vibes here.
Yes, and I guess the Tigerjeet Singh thing is because that's around this time would be like an iconic Inoki antagonist. My initial thought was, oh, are they going off like a remembering the oil crisis? But then I realized, oh no, I don't really have to go too far for racial stereotypes in wrestling.
No.
I don't have to be looking outside of wrestling for where these stereotypes might be coming from. Then we get to episode 2, where this is where we learn that Tatsuo is a bad journalist because the article they've written on the first episode is mainly photos and very little writing. And this made me wonder, is Clark Kent a terrible journalist as well? Because he never gets to interview Superman. With at least not when Lois Lane is there. Well, I guess he does. Well, yeah, Superman's got more... At various times, he does have more budgetary considerations than Tiger Mask 2 has. Tiger Mask 2 can't make a robot Tiger Mask 2 to show up to prove that he's not Tiger Mask 2.
Well, that we know of yet.
Yes.
Turns out Tiger Mask 2 has all kinds of superpowers we were not aware of.
He does, yes. But then the kid, is it an orphan and another woman who runs an orphanage? I think that might be the case.
I thought that was the mother at first, but that makes more sense just within the Tiger Mask lore.
They've come to the sporting paper they work for, and they're like, "Well, have you spoken to any other journalists?" And it's like, "No, we've come here because you're the best." But then the kid's like, "But that article you wrote yesterday stunk." And so they want to talk to they're going to write an article. They're trying to get hold of Tiger Mask and write an article about what's going on here. Tie it in with this kid who he saved. It'll be great.
Yeah, and the mother of the orphanage also wants to know Tiger Mask's address so that they can send a thank you letter.
Yeah.
The editor is extremely into this hot woman who has come into the office and says, "You need to get me pictures of Spider-Man. I mean, get me the address of Tiger Mask," which is not great for Tatsuo.
So we end up at the New Japan Dojo, because where would you go and ask? But at the New Japan Dojo, surely they must know something. And they show up, and Inoki's like, "More journalists asking where Tiger Mask lives." Everyone's been asking where Tiger Mask lives. Also, we have a brief cutaway to the Space Wrestling Federation, where it looks like Outer Space Mask is going to be murdered by American mercenaries, but he's given a second chance, but there'll be no third chances for you. Then... Are the mercenaries also on the roof at night? And they get scared off by a tiger, and Antonio Inoki goes to investigate. And he also gets attacked by the tiger until Tiger Mask calls him off, because this is his tiger buddy who dresses in armor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is where Tiger Mask kind of sits Antonio Inoki down and explains his origin story, which is a montage that is insanely violent. That I think takes place in the same tiger cave that trained the first Tiger Mask, but wasn't the Tiger Cave organization destroyed by the first Tiger Mask? I don't know. This is another piece of like confusing lore.
Yeah, everything which takes place between how he explains he was at the orphanage, the same orphanage from the original Tiger Mask.
Yeah.
Like, at most, it's 10 years. And I don't think you're like... I think you seem to be older than 20. It doesn't quite make sense. But that's fine. This could be the future. We are dealing with space federations and outer space masks, after all.
Or are we?
Well, we'll find out in the next episode. These must be some of your notes, because I haven't written these down. You mentioned he's got tiger.
Yeah, these are my notes. I was extremely entertained by two things, like the montage where we see Tiger Mask 2 kind of survive the tiger's cave.
Yes.
Which is just insanely violent. Yeah, everybody dies except for him,
yes,
basically.
Pretty much. They put people in barrels and throw them off waterfalls. A lot of them are like, the initial ones seem like extreme things people have done in real life and come a cropper. And then after this, the ones who make it past that point, the training goes, now the real training starts. And we see a guy on a treadmill being chased by a giant circular saw.
Yes. We see a wrestling ring surrounded by spikes, and one wrestler gets thrown out of it, and then the screen cuts to blood just covering the screen. Oh, it's a lot.
Yeah, I was worried after the first episode that this was going to be like a bolderized take, like everything was going to be a lot tamer for 81. And then episode 2 is like, no, don't worry, you're going to get loads of blood and violence. You're all sorted.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is amped up here. Then after that, Tiger Mask just kind of explains his origin story to Inoki, and now the two of them are partners, I assume. Tatsuo kind of comes back, and they hear that OSM is having a press conference, and they need to get in an airplane stat. But they're not there in time. They see all the other planes leave just as they arrive. And it turns out that what happened is that good old OSM was having a press conference on top of an airplane to announce his match with Tiger Mask 2. It's wild. But the best part is at the end, Tetsuo needs to train to prepare for his mask against OSM. And the way he does that is with an extended training montage with his tiger sidekick in the mountains, where he just wrestles the tiger. It owns. It's so crazy. in how he is suplexing this tiger and pile driving this tiger. He plays dead with the tiger and then suplexes the tiger when the tiger gets too close. And then tells the tiger, "Oh, you got to be careful. You can never assume your opponent is actually down." It's great stuff. And that's kind of how we end that episode. It ends on a great high note.
Okay, this episode is also the one with multiple surprise sunglass drops from Tetsuo as well in the early conversation. Where whenever he's surprised, his eyebrows go up and his sunglasses drop down his nose. It's a quite an endearingly goofy affectation.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get episode 3, where we're going to get Outer Space Mask versus Tiger Mask 2, the rematch. And
in a normal wrestling ring, by the way.
So
definitely a normal wrestling match.
And Kazuya, this year's orphan, is worried that he can't get there because he can't afford tickets. But then a letter arrives with tickets for him from Tiger Mask himself. I mean, it seems endangering the child, given the last time he came to this match, he was hurled in the air. and of course, during the process of all this coverage, Tetsuo manages to disappear again. What could possibly have caused him to disappear? Oh, and then we get his tiger mobile, you say, rolling up. We get the full entrance this time of Outer Space Mask, which is also kind of hallucinatory.
Yeah, it's really cool. Most of this episode is actually spent with this one wrestling match.
Oh, I remember he gets out of it. He doesn't go to the show at all. He sends the other guy, and he's covering the synchronized swimming. That's his excuse for not being at the wrestling show. Then he has to make an excuse at the synchronized swimming.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the entire episode, the match after that point. It's a good chunk of it, isn't
yes.
it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And at this point, it's basically superpowers.
Yeah.
Because not only can Outer Space Mask fly around and fall from a great height and land on his head on Tiger Mask, he can also spin really fast in the air and catch Tiger Mask in a vortex that he struggles to get out of. So you would think, oh, he's fighting an actual alien, a real-life alien, right?
Yes,
no, it turns out, in this Mask versus Mask fight, where Tiger Mask eventually does win, Outer Space Mask is unmasked, and he turns out to be the famous American astronaut Henry, the hero of America. So I don't know, man. This is wild. This was a lot of fun.
He then gets kidnapped by a Batman, doesn't he? Hmm? He gets kidnapped by some sort of Batman after that. Presumably to be punished by
yes,
the Space Federation.
And presumably the Batman is who Tiger Mask 2 will be facing next.
Yeah, I wonder if like each one of them is going to turn out to be some sort of hero for a different country. It's like, this is what we imagine this country's archetypal hero would be. Or whether that's just for this first one.
That's a fun idea, actually. I kind of love that. One detail I picked up on is how, you know, in every one of these kind of Shonen Jump fights, you have to have somebody sitting on the sidelines explaining how the superpowers work. And we're kind of at that point here in 1981. In the 1969 show, when there was commentary on the side about what was happening, Giant Baba had the role of kind of explaining everything to the commentators. And this time around, it's Antonio Inoki doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting detail. I guess that this is, unlike the first series, this is almost exclusively NJPW wrestlers?
I think so, yeah. For sure, I was looking up, because I was looking up the episode where Stan Hansen appears, and so it's definitely throughout they're going to have New Japan wrestlers.
Okay.
I guess they may throw in some other like made-up ones in the same way that they do in Double and Tiger Mask of, like, here's some made-up wrestlers who aren't necessarily part of Tiger's Den, Tiger's Cave, Tiger's Hole, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I'm going to guess it's going to be like, here's a wrestler from New Japan to establish that this is happening in the real world, and that Tiger Mask you see in the ring, when you come to a New Japan show, it's the same one who's in the cartoon. You dumb kids. But yeah, I'm sure they sold a ton of merchandise. I know they did, because some of the merchandise was quite esoteric. There's that. I think I've got an MP3 of a Tiger Mask album, which is just a commentary of Tiger Mask matches.
Oh, real ones or ones from the
cartoon? Real ones. These are, yeah, Sayama ones, which I know was a thing which was happening, but yeah, when that showed up, I was like, oh, I'll grab that. I'll probably never listen to it, but it's, if I ever, for some reason, need it, I've got it. I don't think it's a singing one, because I have seen, I've got the video footage of him singing on some variety show, and Sayama has many skills, but singing is not one of them.
I was about to say, how gifted could one man be? Sayama is a really well-regarded wrestler, right?
Yeah, and sort of like a progenitor for mixed martial arts, as we know today.
Okay.
Because that's the kind of, that's the why the character was like limited period time, because he wanted to go and do the UWF. So more realistic wrestling.
And then the rights moved to All Japan after that, and that's when Misawa was Tiger Mask. Yeah.
And then Koji Kanemoto, and their now current Tiger Mask 4, who is a guy I turned opinions on when I saw him live, and also once we started getting all the promos translated, I'm more of a fan of Tiger Mask 4 now.
Okay. Yeah, out of the Tiger Mask, I guess Sayama is the best regarded. Like, Mitsuwa's best matches happened after he left the Tiger Mask gimmick.
Yeah, I think so. Whereas Sayama's his best matches are when he was Tiger Mask. So I think as like the originator and as the character, he's probably the one looked at as the... And then there's all sorts of other Tiger Masks. And sometimes he comes back as the Tiger and Super Tiger to get around the not having the rights to do the character. And there's all sorts of other people who have feline gimmicks. Yeah, I'm not so... I mean, I've got more of this I could watch. But I'm not really in a hurry to watch anymore. But it was fun watching these three.
Yeah, I feel about the same way. I don't know if I like it more than the first series. But it has... It's fun in its own way. That's a little more familiar to me. Because the wrestling matches play out more like a Shonen Jump fight than it does in the first series.
Yeah, I think I like the first series more, in partly because it is less familiar. It's got that more raw feeling to it, where it's like, we're doing something here, we don't really fully know what we're doing, but it's working. And then people took that and built on it in the future.
Oh, before we get up to the next series, I also wanted to give a shout out to the opening for the first series.
Oh, yes.
But like both classic. The music and the animation for it is terrific.
Yeah, I was still humming it hours after watching it. It worms your way into your head.
It really does. Theme.
Yeah, weirdly, talking about Jushin Thunder, the weird thing about Jushin Thunder's theme is the theme he's got is not the theme for the anime Jushin Thunder Liger. It's the theme for the Jushin Liger part. When he became Jushin Thunder Liger in the anime, he had a new theme tune, and that's not the one he carried on using. I don't know whether he may have used it for a period, but then they probably went back to the one people liked more. That's your weird little bit of Jushin Thunder Liger trivia. It's probably the only bit of trivia I know. Then, on to Tiger Mask Double. October 2016. also starting that week, many of these the very same day, because we're now in the 21st century and there's so much anime you could watch. Time Bokan 24, Digimon Universe, Apple Monsters, Tamarin Friends, Cheese Sweet Adventure, Mobile Suit Gundam, Iron-Blooded Orphans, second season. Because now it is always one of those years where there is lots of remakes and sequels. We've run out of ideas. We have to keep on going back to the old ones. And one such an old idea which we went back to is Tiger Mask Double. Returning for this show, we have Hideyuki Hori, who was the voice of Tiger Mask 2. He returns later in the series than the episodes we're watching as Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega Cake Thief. Ryuichi Tanaka, who was the voice of Kentaro Takaoka, also known as the Yellow Devil from the original series, he returns as the self-same character. Hidekatsu Shibata, the voice of Mr. X from the original series, also returns as Mr. X in this series. And episode director Tomoharu Katsumata returns having directed episodes of all three series. I think episode 6 is the episode he does of Tiger Mask Double. So, as I said, this is a show I watched weekly as it was coming out, and absolutely loved most of it, particularly these first episodes. We open with a guy called Daisuke Fuji fighting Yellow Devil, who is defeated with the Devil's Crush. That's Fuji's defeated, not Yellow Devil, because Yellow Devil is the driving force of the plot of this show. And his trainees, one of whom is his son, swear to end the Yellow Devil. Cut to years later, where we meet a man hanging upside down, fighting a bear. And this guy is also a Naoto. What is the guy's name in Tiger Mask Double? I forgot to write his surname down. He's not a Date, and Date doesn't come back. That was always the thing. That's why I didn't think he died, because I think there was the discussion at the time when it was on of like the possibility of the original Tiger Mask somehow returning as part of the plot. Maybe they were holding out for a sequel, holding that back. And they learn that Tiger's Den wrestlers are coming. He's being trained by Kentaro Takeoka, who runs a garage now. And we also see that Daisuke's son is climbing a mountain, much like we saw Tiger Mask 2 doing during his origin story. And I assume at some point this will also have been shown in the original Tiger Mask 2. And he's the guy who gets to the top. He's Takuma Fuji. And when he gets to the top, you see the big, like, winged tiger statue from the opening credits of the first series. And opens the door below the statue. And he meets Miss X, who explains that he can now be a tiger. Tiger the Dark. Also, she does a bit of puppetry with the mask. We check back in at Takaoka Motors, where they're watching Global Wrestling Monopoly, which I had completely forgotten that was
the
name.
I wonder who that could possibly be.
I do love how unsubtle this is about them being WWE, particularly later on, particularly when we get to the two women's wrestlers who are just Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch.
Jeez. Yeah, it's fun to see how ham-fisted this whole thing is. It's also interesting to watch in 2020 when I think there's a lot less anxiety about WWE taking over Japanese wrestling, because NXT Japan, for multiple reasons, seems like it just isn't happening, at least for a few years. Yeah. Felt more like a live issue in 2016, I bet. And
I think it was still a live issue like early last year, but
yeah. The coronavirus kind of put a stake through it. Plus, some of the upper management shakeups that I think happened with WWE.
Yeah, also hilarious stories about DDT getting WWE to pay for the visas for all their talents to come
that's
over
really
the WrestleMania
good. Did you hear
weekend.
The story about how Rossi Ogawa was offered a place in the WWE yes. Hall of Fame if he sold Stardom to them?
Yeah, because it was DDT had done that with like no intention, already knowing they were lined up with Cyber Agent, and
oh, that's even better.
Yeah, it's particularly when you consider like what happened to Pac that same weekend and not being able to get his visa. But yes, in this the global wrestling, but they do comment about like how everybody all over the world loves globally wrestling monopoly except Japan. So they're putting on this show to try and convince Japan to love global wrestling monopoly too, and they're gonna have a match featuring Odin versus Mikasa Kaio, and they're like, "Oh, Odin, that's the guy who was with Yellow Devil that night." We also get commentary on this event from Okada, who's been asked about it by one of his young lions, Ryu.
A quick question. Is Odin supposed to be a WWE wrestler?
No. I do like the thing we get with him is that his story carries on throughout the entire series.
Okay.
I don't know, have you seen all of this before? Have you only seen these three episodes?
Yeah, only these three episodes.
Okay, yeah. No, his story... Because the bit... I don't know whether this is the same for Astronaut Henry in Tiger Mask 2. But as we'll get to it, he suffers a similar fate of being dragged away after suffering defeat. Actually, it is this episode. It's the end of this episode. But we occasionally come back to him and like what happens to a Tiger's Den wrestler when they failed. Which is a nice bit of storytelling. Yeah, they're talking about this. The show is going to be WrestleMax. Takaoka goes and meets Mikasa Kaio, who's going to fight Odin, and like convinces him, "You don't want to fight Odin. Let's do a deal. We can sort something out. You look at you shaking. You can't fight in that condition." So he comes out to the match, but then Tiger Mask interferes before it even starts. And Mikasa's like, "I'm ill, he's my replacement, I'm off," and legs it out. And Takaoka's niece, Haruna, grabs the mic from Miss X and introduces... I think she pointedly... Because they're announcing their weights in pounds, and then she pointedly announces Tiger Mask's weight in kilograms. And then they have a match.
Wait, why did she do that?
I think it's just because Americans would announce the weights in pounds and Japan's metric. I think it's just to show a difference between the two countries. Yeah, so and then he wrestles and gets humiliated by Tiger Mask. And to add to the humiliation, Tiger Mask then lets Odin win by count out.
With a 10 count, interestingly
yes.
enough.
Again, because it's the American count system.
Yep.
And as he runs past Tiger the Dark, they give each other the eye as if to say, "I know you from somewhere." And then we go into this show's ending theme, King of the Wild. So the opening theme is like a redo, like a modern redo of the original theme, which is great.
Oh, it's so bad.
I like it.
It is absolutely awful.
But King of the
Wild
is even better, though.
Those Fox Kids or like 4Kids shows will go, "Okay, let's take this old song, but we got to make something for the kids here. What are the kids like? Dubstep and record scratches, so we'll add that."
Well, to be fair, I guess I'm not a kid. That may be why I liked it. But I like King of the Wild even more, the ending theme.
Yeah.
So that's your first episode. It gives us... It kind of cuts straight to the action. You know, both Tiger the Dark's joined Tiger's Den to find Yellow Devil and defeat him, whereas Tiger Mask has been training outside of the system to defeat Yellow Devil, and possibly all of Tiger's Den. Takaoka's got a grudge with them. I believe he used to be a Tiger's Den wrestler as well, and he turns face during the original series, takes off the Yellow Devil mask, and starts fighting as himself. And then gets injured, which is why he's walking around with a crutch. Then we get episode 2, where everyone's questioning, what will New Japan's move be against global wrestling monopoly coming to Japan? And then we get the next Tiger's Den wrestler they're bringing in to fight Tiger Mask, and it's going to be Black Python, the British Master of the Mat. They're going to be announcing this at a press conference, which Haruna convinces her uncle to allow her to go because he's ugly and cranky and old, whereas she's young, charming. I guess I don't know how charming she really is. In effectiveness.
No. but she thinks she is, which is kind of a fun aspect of the character. She knows what she wants to do, and she's just going to go do it. She doesn't take no for an answer.
And to represent all
I kind of liked how this plays out, where Haruna actually gets played by NJPW.
Yes.
In fact, a lot of the show keeps talking about how clever and smart and good NJPW is, which is so overbearing that it's actually kind of funny.
Yeah. It's this episode, introduces Yuji Nagata as the voice of how wrestling works in Japan.
Yeah, this was strange to me. Did Yuji Nagata, like, temporarily retire for a little bit around 2016?
No, he's wrestling. He'll wrestle here as well. He'll wrestle in this show.
He's just also upper management. Okay.
I think he has some degree of management responsibility. I think he's more in training the Young Lions, from what I understand, or was at this point. I don't know if he's... I think it might be Makabe in charge of that now.
Oh, Makabe has time to do that between all his talk show appearances?
Yeah, possibly not. Maybe, yeah. But obviously it's Shibata in the US. And,
yes.
And possibly will be for the whole system, I think, based on how well the people who go and work at his gym end up coming out.
Yeah.
No. I think he's just we can't say Gedo is the booker and have him as the mouthpiece of how everything works. So
yeah, the way that the show works with kayfabe is interesting because it doesn't break it, but it still feels closer to what modern wrestling is like than the earlier series. Which, I mean, obviously it's the newest one. But it's more recognizably working within what wrestling is like than some of the earlier series.
Yeah, and it really goes deeper into that in some of the later episodes of, like, spot shows for little, like, a paid... I think there's, like, an episode which covers, like, paid shows, so where somebody's paid you to run a show somewhere. There's a character called Fukuwara Mask, who's essentially Kikataru, of like this comedy independent wrestler who takes independent bookings, and he constantly comes up on like various people's shows.
This episode, they actually book a tag match to build towards a singles match.
Yes.
Or that seems to be the idea.
Yes, and then it'll be Black Python and Tiger the Dark versus Tiger Mask and a tag team partner of your choice, Tiger Mask. And they're like, we don't know any of the wrestlers.
So New Japan offers one of their Young Lions, yes. Which I have to say, this is my favorite bit out of the first three episodes that we've seen. Young Lions are one of my favorite things in NJPW. I really like how they worked this guy.
Yes.
Into the story.
Yeah, because I thought, even having seen this episode before, because of New Japan booking is so ingrained on me at this point, I was like, oh, this is bad news for Ryu. He's the one non-star in this tag match. He's going to take a pin.
Yes.
But it turns out it's not the case. Tiger Mask just humiliates Black Python and then tags Ryu in, so Ryu gets the pin, further humiliating him. Just multiple German suplexes on this fella. But yeah, Ryu, yeah. I see your notes, you say you hope Ryu's a recurring character. He certainly is. Yes, he's all the way through this show.
Okay.
And then Tiger Mask demands they bring him someone stronger. And so global wrestling monopoly say, okay, we'll bring you Red Death Mask. Oh, I think it was it Michael Nakazawa playing Red Death Mask? I think that might be who it was. When they did it as a live version.
Oh, interesting.
And then we get episode 3, which I forgot to write notes on. It's all the connective tissue that episode 1 left out to get them to be Tiger Masks immediately in the first episode.
Yeah, it's the backstory that honestly I didn't find all that interesting, because you can kind of figure it out just by watching the first two episodes. Yeah.
But there weren't any circular conversations about loans, thankfully. But yeah, it was basically more information about the initial fight and establishing, oh, we're using the same training base that the original Tiger Mask used. I assume this shows up at some point in the original series. With all sorts of high-tech, super-powered gadgetry to become better wrestlers so we can take down Tiger Den. And then at the end, Red Death Mask shows up and you're wishing... we said 4 episodes, not 3. Or that the 4th episode was 3.
Yeah, again, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, so I give you some non-spoilery thoughts about the whole thing then. It drags in places, I will say, the whole show does. It probably didn't need to be quite as long as it is. But it generally gets you good use out of the guest stars. There's one line which is incredibly mean to Hirooki Goto. Who does not get?
I can guess what that would be.
He does not get to appear in the entire thing. It's a comment about the time he was doing his similar gimmick to, God, I can't remember the guy's name. It was when he was painting his face and sitting under waterfalls.
Oh yeah, in his feud with Suzuki.
Yeah. Like just after he turned up to Chaos.
I was thinking it'd be more along the lines about how he fails just about every title match.
No, it was more about how he's got no charisma and is boring.
That's also true. Poor guy. I kind of like him, but yeah.
Yeah, it's
entirely fair.
Yeah, it's mainly Okada, obviously, you're going to put in there. Okada and Nagata, I would say, are the people who are in it the most. Tanahashi's in it, Naito's in it a fair bit.
Yeah. Okada and Nagata don't quite feel like themselves, or at least not the wrestling personas they've projected this whole time.
No.
And I can't tell if that's a good idea or not, or I'm undecided on that, because I guess you could say, oh, this is just how they are backstage. But then they don't recognize
them. Don't feel like
themselves.
That. I think Okada is a lot goofier backstage, as judged by the King of Pro Wrestling tournament. And from what little I've seen of him, like after shows, when he's been in the UK for shows. So Honma gets a surprising amount, along with Makabe, of appearances. But there'll be lots of cameos of just like a silent appearance of Ishii. And all that stuff. There's an entire episode about the Bullet Club trying to buy cakes in the town before Tokyo Makabe can eat them, which arguably is an episode which probably does not need to be in the show. But
that
it
sounds
was very
amazing,
funny.
Actually. Yeah. I might specifically just watch that episode.
I think that might be the only Bullet Club content is in there. I guess it'd be weird. And I think they generally try to shy away from putting any other heel groups in, because you've already got a heel group.
Yeah. Does Tetsuya Naito show up?
Yeah, he definitely does, yes.
Okay. Is this, I forget, is this before his Los Ignobles gimmick?
It's probably at the peak, as it's heading upwards, because I think 2015 is when Evil debuts as his, the first member.
Okay.
Of the Japan version. This is, as it's really building its popularity. So I think it must have been the point where they're like, we've got to put Naito in this thing because we'd be fools not to.
Okay. Yeah, this might have been when he first won the heavyweight championship.
But yeah, there's most episodes have got some sort of New Japan content, and it does a lot of stuff about, as I say, about the wrestling industry. It does a really strange thing. It's one of these shows that I like and Niall and Dwayne like, where it finishes the series one episode early and then just does another episode where it basically just high-fives itself about how great it is. But in this case, the final episode is basically a pilot for an entirely different show. And it's fantastic. It may be the best episode of the entire series.
Is this the one about Joshi wrestling?
It is the one about Joshi wrestling, yes.
Okay. That, I mean, Bushiroad owns a Joshi wrestling company now. They could absolutely
do that.
They do,
and they've got a wrestler with a Tiger Mask gimmick in that company. So.
Yeah, she kind of does, doesn't she? I didn't think of that, but that is right.
But yeah, it does a really good job at like following strands of multiple of these characters. So like I say, Odin comes back, we get like episodes with him, we'd like check back in on him and where he is, to the point where I think he's in the final episode. But there's other people, so like Kevin, the blonde guy who's from the same rookie year as Tiger the Dark. He's got a big plot, and it becomes like slowly clear that he's in love with Tiger the Dark. And Miss X is like much more multi-layered than you'd think she would be. Generally cracking writing. It's got the usual problem of a modern Toei show where some episodes are going to be better than others because they're making so many shows at once. And yeah. Some shows will say, I need that animator on my show. Can we have him, please?
Yeah, I gotta say, it looks pretty bad for most of the first three episodes we watched.
Ah, do you think so? I mean...
Yeah, well, maybe it's just because we're coming off of two really good-looking shows, and then watching this one. But it doesn't look as fluid. I really don't like most of the character designs.
Oh, you might be in trouble when you get to
as distinctive or cool.
You
so.
Might be in trouble when you get to the Wano part of One Piece. Then,
yeah,
this is a lot of where that visual look gets honed is in this because they've got this filter to give it like this hand drawn quality that they're using here, which they definitely bring over to or a version of it into Wano to a degree. This is not, none of these are like the highlight episodes in terms of animation, but there's much worse looking episodes than these three either. I think the first like mind blowing episode is the Red Death Mask match, which I can't remember when. That might be that episode 6. Can't remember though. It may be the very next episode. But yeah, it kind of goes for the really wild, loose animation. It's trying to emulate, to a degree, the original series when it gets into those wilder fights.
Okay. Well, it's good to know that they do have that coming up later. I don't know, I wasn't quite sold on the show based on these first three episodes. I could see myself enjoying it, but I don't think it's the kind of thing I want to marathon.
I was watching these first three episodes, I was like, oh, I remember, I've forgotten how much I love this show. And I kind of want to watch it all again now.
Yeah. I there's something about this. I think both the visual design, but also I think some of what you're talking about does allay one concern I had. Like, I kind of felt like none of the characters were really sketched out enough to be interesting. But it sounds like they build up a lot of that over time.
They do, yeah. So even that nurse gets a massive plot line. The nurse who looks after the dad at the hospital. But it probably just gives you... In fact, generally, I would say most people who are in these first three episodes are the people you're following throughout. So the only one you... I guess he doesn't really have a plot line is Fukuwara Mask, but he's like a fairly regular appearing character. He kind of takes on the that Antonio Inoki barber role of professional wrestler who's doing the commentary. But his gimmick of like he's not aligned with either of the companies allows him to be like more neutral in the feuding between New Japan and GWM. There is like a crazy gimmick match. I can't remember what the name of it is. Like, insanely. It's like trying to like the. It's something even WWE wouldn't do. It's close to that WCW World War gimmick when they'd have three rings next to each other. But it's even beyond that. I think you have to like fight your way from ring to ring. You have to be like the winner in one ring before you can get into the next ring.
Oh, okay. That's fun. So like a mini tournament within one match. That's
and then fun idea. Also at one point, a robot version of Roman Reigns shows up in an episode. And then there's a really weird episode. I think episode 6. No, is it 6 or must be later than 6. There's a early on episode where they have the comedy idols Ham and Noodles, who were getting loads of coverage in the press that year in Japan because they didn't have a management company. They were just crowdfunded. They put on all their shows based on getting crowdfunding for them first. And this was one of their first professional roles, was appearing in this anime, and then they split about 2 months later, acrimoniously. Partly over them not having management and money problems. So the danger is, if you've got a manager, they may keep more money from you than they should do, as has come out in recent years in Japan. But I guess the other problem is, if you don't have a manager and you're like only 18 years old, maybe you can't manage the money you're getting through that crowdfunding particularly well. But yeah, it's a shame because what I saw, people had subtitled some of their skits and stuff, and they were really funny. And they're pretty funny on this thing, but they're there to like show how wrestling audiences don't want to see anything which isn't wrestling on a wrestling show. Which I believe may be based on bitter experience from Bushiroad, and when they like had to whenever they would like doing something with any cross promotion with any of their other products in New Japan, I think eventually they learned that they better close those comments on YouTube, otherwise you'll get people saying, "Why are these anime voice actresses talking about our wrestling? Please remove them." Whereas, ironically, in this, we had the anime fans going, "Why are these non-anime voice actors doing voice acting on this show?" Not so much that way, but you can tell that they're not voice actors in that they talk like normal people when they're doing the show, which I think was, if you've ever seen Inuyashiki, is an accusation hurled at that as well. Is bad voice acting, and you go, "It's not bad voice acting. It's just they're actual actors who can sound like human beings. It's just different voice acting."
Yeah. And the Inuyashiki... No, that's a different show. Sorry.
Inuyashiki is the one with the old man and the psychopathic teenage boy who become robots.
That's right. Yeah.
Which I've not seen the live action of that yet. But that's Tiger Mask for you. But we got some more stuff we can talk about because we both watched... yesterday's, as we're recording, Summer Struggle in Jingu. But as this won't come out for a few weeks, let's keep it brief, because it'll be all out of date news by the time anyone hears it. So, first match was Yoshinobu Kanemaru versus Master Watto. So first things first, Bradley, what do you think of Master Watto's gimmick?
It's growing on me. I think with a gimmick that out there, it takes time for the wrestler to get into it, and I think Watto's getting there. He's definitely an ambitious wrestler. This is my first time seeing him, because I've never seen him as a young lion. And I kind of like his more karate-influenced style. He also, of course, has a lot of flips that he can do, which look alright. Otherwise, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, is Gato punishing Watto because he had a bad excursion in Mexico? But now I can see how it can work. So
Yeah, that I had the same thought, and but then I had the thought of I think unless you're super charismatic, like Hiromu, I think there's a danger that when you come back from excursion, is that you're going to get given a gimmick that is basically a Chunibyo gimmick.
Like... Yeah. Yeah. Well, this also happened with Evil, right?
Because Evil,
when he was a young lion,
yes,
there was a lot of talk about how he just had zero charisma. So he needed to compensate with the most out there gimmick that they have on the roster, basically.
Yeah. I think even Jay White's gimmick when he came back
That. I can see that.
He's well tuned in that. It's like, oh, I'm the Switchblade. Those people used to call him the Knife Pervert.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of worked out for them. So
it is.
I think part of Watto's problem is he looks too much like a babyface to look like someone who could be a badass enough to be called master.
Oh, the grandmaster. So, oh, I guess he's the way to the grandmaster. He's not there yet. But he lost here to Kanemaru.
Solid match. I kind of liked this one.
Yeah, I did too. And I quite like Kanemaru, even though he's also a guy you could accuse of not having bountiful amounts of charisma. But as a grumpy old man, he's pretty good at doing that.
He sneaks up on you, doesn't it? Kind of, the more you watch of him, the more you appreciate just how he's a subtle wrestler who's very, very good at getting other people over, which I think is part of why he's still feuding with Watto.
Yeah, and there was a few like heelish characterisms to Watto at the end with his frustrations. Though I noticed in the interviews, Tenzan's accusing the referee of not being good at his job, saying Watto had got his shoulder up. So I don't know whether, but they always play with that. They don't mind having baby faces act a little bit heelish.
Yeah,
but because I always thought, oh, maybe if Hiromu had retained, then they were going to like heal up Watto a bit. But I guess we've got Ishimori, so it'll probably be a show next, I guess, because Yo's out of action.
It's weird because we have the G1 coming up almost immediately, right?
Yes, so, I forget about that.
They're probably going to have juniors in the G1 like they did for the New Japan Cup. But their pool of juniors that they have in the age of coronavirus is small enough that it feels like it's got to be either Sho or Watto. And the only way Watto would get a challenge is if he had a surprise victory in the G1.
Yeah.
I just don't see Watto being in the G1, though, yet. He doesn't feel like he's ready.
Yeah, I guess you could put Kanemaru against Ishimori for not necessarily in a big show, but just like a...
Oh, that'd be a fun defense match, yeah.
Then we got the King of Pro Wrestling Championship, a title invented by...
Don't you mean Kazuchika Okada Pro Wrestling Championship?
Yes. A tournament he'd invented where... Oh, blimey, let me see if I get this right. So it's a trophy, not a belt. And
kind of.
If you win this championship,
for the title,
you get the trophy saying you're the champion, but only you're only the provisional champion.
Right.
And these were the tournament. The first rounds were determined by a gimmick match of which each challenger would bring their own gimmick, and the fans would vote online as to which gimmick it would be.
Right.
This led to a four-way, which had Toru Yano, whose gimmick was two counts, wasn't it? Yep. Desperado's were that your finishers were banned, so he won when Kojima used his lariat. Sonata
which
and
is great.
Yeah.
Because Kojima doesn't know how else to finish off a wrestler.
I think they looked up like how long it was. 2008 was the last time he'd won without using the lariat. Sonata just agreed with Sho that submission match was a good idea, and so there was no vote.
Yep.
And Okada's was, he wanted to face Yujiro, Jado, and Gedo 1-on-3, whereas Yujiro wanted
right. That's
it to
what
be...
the fans voted on. I think he brought the suggestion of a lumberjack match.
Yeah, I think the lumberjack match was Yujiro's. Oh, no, it was the opposite way. No, it was the opposite way around. Yes, Okada's was the lumberjack match. I would prefer the lumberjack match, mainly for Jado's health, because it is always a nightmare seeing him move around.
That would be a fun use of chaos, I think.
Yes, it would have got chaos out there as well. But no, it was 1-on-3, so there we go. He won. And then we had this four-way final, which ended when Sanada had Desperado in a submission move, but then Yano low-blowed Okada and rolled him up to win.
Yes. what do you think of Kazuchika Okada Pro Wrestling so far?
I feel like this is probably more his real personality, this goofiness. Yeah. And I think if it's Yano holding on by hook or by crook all the way to the year end, because it's whoever is holding it by the end of the year is the one who is actually that year's King of Pro Wrestling. And I don't whether they'll go with the Suzuki Yano feud again for the Christmas period. It's been a while since, I think a couple of years since they did that, because I think they stopped doing it because they'd done it, gone to that well too many times.
Okay.
But based on the interview at the press conference, he's basically encouraging the fans to always vote for his suggestion.
Yeah, I guess they're still keeping the fans vote on the different steps, yes, that the wrestlers bring. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm a big fan of DDT, but I find the steps that they've been using so far like pretty routine, and the results aren't that different from just a normal match. Like, Sho and Sonata are going to wrestle a submission match against each other no matter what.
Yes.
That's just the style.
I think that was fine just for their characters. Once Yano's got it, you know it's always going to be gimmick matches now of a certain type. It looks like they're heading towards Yano against Desperado for the next one based on Desperado's promo, which was pretty great as well.
Yeah, and Desperado kind of came up with what I thought was the most fun match out of all of them so far. Yeah. That told a good story and used the step well. I don't know. I was not at all hot on KOPW, but I enjoyed the match itself. I think in part because it was so short, so it told a pretty concise story, and I was pleasantly surprised Yano won. I think he's the best champion they could have selected, and he can do a lot to define what a fun step should look like.
Yeah, for KOPW. I kind of want to see a heel take it from him right at the last minute of the year, just because that would be a terribly heelish thing for that heel to do.
Yeah, Despy would be great for that. So, and I'd love to see Despy just get any kind of belt or reward at this point. The guy feels criminally underappreciated.
He does. Again, it's a part of the problem is the gimmick. I think now once they change the mask, so you can actually see his mouth move when he talks helps. But yeah, the initial gimmick is like, what is this guy? And then immediately went to Noah for the Suzuki Gun Invasion as well.
Yeah, and he was also injured just before the Super Juniors last year. So, doing a hardcore match, by the way. So I think he'd be a great fit for a champion as well if we want to bring more hardcore elements to NJPW.
Yeah, so it's a way to get... as I say, the issue is DDT do it, and the other one which reminds me of is... I don't know whether this... I'm sure. I used to follow Dragon Gate religiously until New Japan became so easy to watch. In availability. The Doi Darts gimmick, where Naruki Doi would have a bunch of gimmicks on a dartboard and people would throw darts trying to get the appropriate gimmick they wanted. Although, no, I think it might even had kids out of the audience do it, if I remember correctly.
Oh, that's fun.
Then we got the reason I really wanted this, watch this show. Minoru Suzuki versus Shingo Takagi for the Never Open.
Hell yes. Oh my goodness, I've been looking forward to this for weeks.
I think these might be my two absolute favorite wrestlers.
Yeah, they're up there for me for sure. I mean, Shingo Takagi's match against Ishii in the G1 last year is why I'm still watching wrestling. That was the moment all of this clicked for me, and I went, oh, okay, this is actually amazing.
Yeah, because I've seen Shingo a lot live because of the Dragon Gate UK shows from early part of the 2010s. And then in the last half of the 2010s, I've seen Minoru Suzuki a lot because he's been over in the UK a lot doing stuff for Rev Pro. And yeah, I was really impressed that Suzuki was basically working Takagi's pace. When I've definitely seen matches where Suzuki, the only bumps he takes are the ones he's doing himself. Because clearly he's, I mean, it's great that he wrestles, 52 is he now?
Yep.
But it's clear there's obviously long-running back problems because he does the Ric Flair back bumps where he lands on his side rather than on a flat back bump. But yeah, he definitely was, but they made issue of that as well. Like sometimes he couldn't keep up with Takagi's pace. But that was playing into the match of when Takagi does those super fast Dragon Gate rope runs. But yeah, the pair of them are so good at selling as well and getting their personality across in a match.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just this old bastard who can't believe this younger bastard is standing up to him. And this younger bastard can't believe what this mental case is trying to... God, surely you should have retired at 52 and you still keep on going. And then, of course, in the promo afterwards, Suzuki always puts over the guy who he's defeated because he's a great professional wrestler.
Yep. Yeah, this was a really good match. I think it lived up to some pretty high expectations.
Yeah. I will say I'm really liking the length of these coronavirus shows. I like just having a short number of shows and then definitely having the interval.
I really liked this show overall, and I think a key reason why is it was short. And it felt much shorter than some of the epics we've gotten, like with Dominion, for instance. We'll probably talk about that in the main event, but this was a breezy watch.
Yeah, and then you come back after they've wiped everything down. And we get Taiji Ishimori versus Hiromu Takahashi for the Junior Heavyweight Championship.
This match was also owned. It was really good. Ishimori's offense, I thought, was really convincing. He's a guy that I keep going back and forth on. Like, I didn't really like him as a tag wrestler with ELP. But he's growing on me as a singles wrestler.
See, I quite like him with El Fantasmo because El Fantasmo has that obnoxious heel charisma that Ishimori doesn't have at all.
Yeah, he does kind of feed off of it in a good way that makes him more convincing. I can see that. But I find he's a lot more passive, I guess, in the tag team. That feels like that's being led by El Fantasmo, who I'm not a big fan of. But here, I really like the decision to give the belt back to Ishimori here, and I thought it was actually like a really convincing win, which I was kind of worried about going in wouldn't look that good. But they told a great story with the way Ishimori was working the neck over time and beating up the shoulder to soften Hiromu up for his new submission. Just a quick, effective storytelling right there.
It is weird, though. Ishimori feels like the one wrestler in the Bullet Club who are currently in Japan who wrestles cleanly.
Yes.
Everybody else. Partly because he's the best wrestler in the current Bullet Club in Japan.
Yeah, or at least in the way they're choosing to tell the story.
I think when we get to the final, my feeling is Evil's the guy who's definitely hampered by not having crowds' reactions.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it as well. I think I enjoyed the next match a bit more. Dangerous Tekkers versus Golden Ace.
Yeah, this was a match that when I first realized they were building to it, I kind of hated that they were doing the rematch so soon. And then I was pulled into the story as they built it over the Korakins with Ibushi being frustrated with Tanahashi And they're kind of doing another, Tana's getting old, he's injured, he can't really carry his weight anymore storyline, which they've done before, sure. But this one I thought had some great interactions with Ibushi growing into his role as a leader in NJPW by becoming the leader of this tag team and encouraging Tana to kind of get back on board and be a better wrestler. And of course, like ZSJ and Taichi are delightful. I adore that tag team. Yes. They're so good.
They are. I used to miss the tag team of Taichi and Taka Michinoku. But I think this tag team's good enough that I don't miss that tag team anymore. The thing I used to like about that tag team is how they'd both heal it up. They'd also heal it up against each other, but never as badly as they'd heal it up against their actual opponents. It's like we might be jerks, and we might be jerks to each other, but we're still on the same side when worst comes to worst. Whereas Dangerous Techers do feel like a proper tag team who work in conjunction with each other, even though they're like they seem like a really odd couple, and I suspect neither of them knows what the other are saying when they're doing the promos.
Yeah, I don't think Zach's Japanese is quite there yet, but he does seem delighted to tag with Taichi. They do seem to honestly enjoy each other.
It's
a joy to watch.
Yeah, I suspect that's by design. This is the thing I always think about Suzuki Gun and Suzuki's One Piece fandom. They never turn on each other. I don't think there's ever been someone kicked out of Suzuki Gun. There's people who've left because they've got jobs elsewhere or who've become injured, but I don't think they've ever turned on another member of Suzuki Gun.
Yeah, it's not quite cutthroat like Bullet Club is. They're not going to have a civil war. Yeah.
Yeah, they're united against New Japan.
As a fan of Kota Ibushi, by the way, this storyline gives me a lot of hope that he'll be holding the heavyweight belt by the end of the year. This feels like it's really building up Ibushi to another level, maybe winning the G1 again this year.
You will see, because my feeling is they've taken the belts off Shingo and Hiromu to give them a big run in the G1 as well.
They could, yeah. I've heard a lot of people talking about maybe Hiromu will challenge for the heavyweight, like he had talked about in the build-up to the anniversary match, which I'm fine with as long as they keep him as a junior. The junior division really needs him to stick around.
Yeah, I think his plan is to do that.
Either
that or they just decide to merge all the weight classes come next year through necessity more than anything else. We will see.
I don't know. I think there's a good chance now that some of Japan is opening up that they can bring in maybe Will and Juice. To help round out the G1, but
yeah, that would be because they've both got places in Japan, I believe. So that they're the ones who.
Yeah, I think they're both residents at least, and I don't think any of them have been doing wrestling recently.
Has Juice been on? No, I don't think
he hasn't been on NJPW Strong.
No, okay, no. I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah. Which watch that by the way? It's solid.
Yeah, I hear it, but I've not found the time to watch it yet.
Yeah,
I'm trying to play so many Yakuza games before the next Yakuza game comes out is the issue.
Juice is supposedly injured, by the way, and that's part of why I suspect they're sneaking him into the country for a surprise appearance.
Yeah.
Is that they had to explain at the beginning of NJPW Strong, oh, Juice is injured, so he's not going to make it. And if he has to quarantine himself for 2 weeks once he enters the country, then that's a good way to kind of keep him out of sight.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think all the people have criticism Gedo is people always have criticisms of Gedo's booking around what would be the time of year that it's become. Mm-hmm. But again, he's also hampered by having half the talent available to him and the other half's being booked by Rocky Romero.
And frustratingly enough, I don't know if this is because Bushiroad is too proud to do this or if it's because the other promotions don't trust them. But they're also not bringing in freelancers talent in outside promotions.
I think it'll also be kind of difficult at this point because when you've got Noah and DDT under Cyber Agents.
Yeah, that's part of it. And also, like, Noah and AJPW are running their big tournaments at the same time as the G1, yeah, which is going to be crazy for me because I'm planning to watch all of them. We'll see if I survive September because the five-star Grand Prix is going on at the same time. There's so much wrestling back right now.
Mm. Well, I suspect I'll only get some of the G1 watched. Maybe a little bit more than normal, but because I can have it at least on in the background while I'm working.
Yeah.
Harder to do when you're in the office. Instead, you're having to sneak a look at the phone to see the results. And then, yeah, I think the other thing I want to mention is, do you think Tanahashi put all of that weight on deliberately during the downtime just for this angle?
He keeps posting about his cheat days and how much pizza or sushi or whatever that he eats. So maybe he's just past the point of caring and he's just working it into his character.
But he's always
point.
Showing on his Instagram how much weight he's lost since the lockdown time.
I cannot hate that man. He is he's too charming.
And he's got his toy poodle who looks just like him.
It kind of does.
And then your main event is Tetsuya Naito defeating Evil, accompanied by Dick Togo. I think Evil needed an audience who could boo him.
Yes.
And also, I feel like without an audience to boo him, you don't notice how charismatic he actually is. Because I've seen him live a few times, and he's got a lot of live charisma to him, even when he's half-arsing it, which I think has been every time I've seen him live. He's been half-arsing it. But he still has a good deal of charisma, but that charisma involves like playing off the reactions of the audience. And when there's no reactions to the audience, I think he's kind of hampered. Because when you think about like how much booing Kenta got, I feel like the initial turn on Naito with a crowd which booed, I think that would have been enough to carry him through the boring matches he's been having.
Yeah, I agree. It's been rough. There's not really a way to clap to show disapproval, right?
Yeah.
So,
press your button on your app
I'd
to
like
make it
Evil
boo
a
electronically.
Lot. I think more than most NJPW fans. I think just because I like that archetype of the big bruiser. And I feel like so far I have liked the Evil turn more in theory than in practice. Like, none of the matches have really done it for me. This one got the closest, though. I think because I realized what story they were telling midway through the match when Sonata and Bushi run in.
Yeah, this is my favorite bit of Gedo booking that he does. When a bunch of heels interfere in a match, and then a bunch of baby faces clear them out so the match can end fairly.
Yep. Yep. I'm not a big fan of how the interference is done with Bullet Club, where they just have the sectioned off interference section. Rather than working in the cheating throughout the match like some other heels will do. So it feels a little more natural and not like the loss is caused solely by one bit of cheating.
Yeah.
So that's taken the match down for me, but I am kind of excited about where Evil could go from here. Because when Bullet Club kind of reforms, he's in an interesting position where it's not clear where he would be in the hierarchy, and Bullet Club does place a heavy emphasis on hierarchy, like who is at the top. So you could have another, hopefully more interesting than the first one, Civil War.
Yeah, it definitely feels...
This could be an opportunity for Jay White to turn face.
Yeah, I think that's probably... I'm pretty sure they're planning on turning Jay White face at some point. Now, and whether...
Yeah, they have to.
Particularly once you bring into the equation Anderson and Gallows as well.
Well, didn't Anderson sign with Impact, so...
Yeah, but they're allowed to come to New Japan as well.
Oh, I didn't hear about that. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that is the plan, as far as I'm aware. Yeah, they definitely feels like in their appearances that it feels section that the Yujiro, Gedo, Jado section are not necessarily on the same page as the evil Togo and Ishimori, part of even just the Bullet Club who are left in Japan.
Yeah.
Because you've got them doing all their usual Bullet Club goofery, and you've got evil Togo and Ishimori going around dressed like characters out of Fist of the North Star.
Or maybe Evil could start his own faction away from Bullet Club. That's kind of what I wish he did instead of joining Bullet Club, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I do as well. But I guess the visual of him going up for the fist bump and turning it into the two sweet is a nice visual. Even.
Yeah, that was a really good moment.
Which you couldn't do any other way. But yeah, I wonder whether... I was like, but the Chaos is still around. That's the thing. It's like a unit which feels like it has long since outserved its purpose.
Its purpose is to continue to sell merch, which it does very well.
Yes,
so
that's what kind of.
I don't think it's going
they
anywhere.
All do, but I guess it's that Dragon Gate use. It's my time with Dragon Gate makes me expect them to occasionally close all factions down and start a whole bunch of new factions, so you can sell a whole load of new t-shirts.
Yeah, that's kind of. What I guess is happening with Stardom here in a bit with the Tokyo Cyber Squad after Hana died, which is kind of a bummer. Anyway, not germane to this conversation. Sorry, that just made me think of that again.
But now I feel like there'll be eventually too many members of the Bullet Club. So yes, it will. It feels like it will have to split.
Evil as a faction leader does feel right to me. And I feel like as a start to a higher tier evil, I'm okay with this, as long as this goes the same way as it did with Naito, where eventually the interference stops, and he's just able to win clean. Which I don't see any reason why he couldn't. He has the skills to be convincing at it.
I think or dirty without assistance. Win dirty without assistance.
Yeah, without assistance, yeah.
That'd be fine, like a Suzuki. I do wonder, like, which unit is going to get all the run-ins during the G1? Because that's another bit of Gedo booking, is like, one heel unit will do all the run-ins.
It's got to still be Bullet Club, right?
I assume it'll still be Bullet Club.
If Yujiro is in the G1, that's going to be his thing. He's going to win entirely through interference if he does win.
Yeah, I suspect that might be the case.
Same with Evil. I'm not looking to this G1 as much as most years, just because it's gonna have a lot of wrestlers who are in kind of a weird spot or just don't feel like they belong in the G1, but they're there because coronavirus.
But there will be shorter shows because of coronavirus, because they're not doing all the tags for the people who aren't on the show. It'll just be the tournament matches, and that's it.
Yeah, that's true.
So there is a chance that I would actually watch every match in the tournament. I forgot about that. Yeah, that is an increased chance that I get to watch every single match of the tournament. And there may be shorter matches as well, judging by the length of some of these matches here. Again, because you don't want to be in contact with people for too long. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see who's in it. Very curious as to see what they do for January 4th. Will it be a socially distanced Tokyo Dome? I don't think the Jingu Stadium did look great, even 2/3 empty, with the sun slowly going down. I thought it looked great with the sun going down.
Yeah, they had some really nice shots. The shot of Naito with the belts at the end as the fireworks go off in the background,
yeah,
that felt like a shot we're going to be seeing a lot for years. Looked really good too.
Any other wrestling you want to talk about, Bradley? This is the only stuff I've been watching. I've not even watched the Rev Pro stuff because I only watch Rev Pro stuff when I'm there live.
If you're looking for recommendations, like the Gato Move had the Choco Pro show for Emi Sakura's 25th anniversary, and that was a lot of fun. They wrestle a very unique style because they don't have a ring. They just have a mat in an old dentist office, I think is what it is. which leads to a lot of fun wrestling psychology, because they kind of have to come up with more and different new moves in it with different restrictions.
Yes, and I think I only watch Gato Pro when I see Chris Brooks in a thumbnail, because I'm normally guaranteed some sort of ceiling-based hijinks.
Chris Brooks's mission to throw every Josie wrestler into the ceiling continues. He had a fun match, of course, with Antonio Honda, who I think he works very well with. And they were tagging in a three-way tag match. That was really good. I just watched the finals and semifinals of the Tokyo Princess Cup. So if you like women's wrestling, the Tokyo Joshi Pro just did their equivalent of the New Japan Cup. And the semifinals between Miyu and Shoko were absolutely terrific. That was the best thing I saw this weekend. Blew the entirety of the Jingu show out of the water. Very good mat wrestling with a lot of stiff strikes. Hard hits, and just a story told very, very well. Shoko is a wrestler that has grown on me a lot since she had that tag storyline match with Hyper Masao. I follow like half a dozen promotions closely, and just about every other promotion loosely. So I'm almost always watching a few hours of wrestling a week. You know that insane pace I had for watching anime all the time?
Yeah, yeah. You've just switched over to wrestling now.
Yeah, that's what's happened.
Have you been watching Kamen Rider 01?
Yes, I'm not caught up on it yet. In fact, I'm not even at the age of coronavirus.
Okay.
But it has grown on me as I've gotten more into it. It's definitely better than Geo, that's for sure.
Yes,
so at some level, I'm just relieved to not be watching Geo. But 01, I think, has gotten to a pretty solid place.
Yeah, just finished at least today.
You did?
The last episode was today.
Okay.
It's Kamen Rider Saber next. Yeah. You'll have some big boots to fill, but it also basically ends and then says, please come and see the movie.
Well, that's how it is nowadays.
It is, but I've never seen it quite so blatantly in end to end. I've seen it blatantly in the middle of the series when they have an episode which ties into the movie to make you go and watch the movie. But
is it actually like ending storylines in the movie?
It ends basically four episodes to the end. There's a character introduced, and you go, "Why are they introducing this super sinister character? And we've only four episodes to go." And then someone comments in Twitter to me, that's probably because he's there for the movie. And then you get to the end of the video. Yep. That's the movie, okay. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I got thrown off by, make sure you watch the half episode. That confused me by skipping over the half episode post-coronavirus.
Oh, is that one of the recap episodes? Is actually a half episode?
It's a half episode. It introduces an essential new character. Really confused.
Thanks for letting me know.
When I was going, well, who's this? But in general, I think top to bottom, it's probably got some of the best acting. And yeah, it's one of these mind-boggling shows where the best actress is the person who's never acted before.
Is that
the one playing Izu?
Which one?
The Huma Gear secretary, Izu.
Okay, yeah, she's so charming. She's a lot of fun. So I didn't know that was her first role.
They give her even more stuff to do as the series goes on. I think clearly because they're like, because sometimes that's the good thing about the Tokusatsu shows. I find is if he's got a good writer, they start clearly writing to the strengths of whoever the best people in the show.
Of the cast over time. Yeah. That's true.
Because that was definitely the case with Rhea Solga, where clearly they were like, okay, red, blue, pink, gold. They're the people who we can trust to carry an episode. Sorry, black and green, your characters are barely going to get any character development.
How's Kira Ranger?
Kira Major, when I've checked in, it's been good. But finding the time to do it weekly, I couldn't really. Every time, particularly, it has a few episodes with I forget his surname, the Rear Solger Falls director. He shows up to do some episodes sometimes, and those are very visually interesting. Like, even more so than just doing his usual slap a Dutch angle on it. There's been some interesting fight choreography. Well, not fight choreography, just filming the fights. Has been interesting. But it did a very good episode for kids about not treating people with disabilities like they're made of china. Not there was a character with a disability. It's a alien crystal woman who's got a curse on her. But essentially, that was the theme of the episode. It's like everyone was like treating her too cautiously, and I was like, ah, that's a nice kid's message.
Yeah, that to put is out there,
For what is essentially a goofy show. But then there's also an episode. All their robots have got personalities because they're powered by these crystals with personalities. And there's one episode where the personalities of the crystals switch with the personalities of the Rangers. So that's a fun episode where everybody gets to play a different character.
Well, yeah, that's a fun idea. Yeah.
To the point where I was like,
I don't know. I didn't like the aesthetic of it, to be honest. Like, I don't like
it's cheap looking. The yes.
Costumes.
They are horrible.
They're
super
ugly.
Yeah. Particularly the civilian costumes are pretty ugly.
Yeah.
But it's got your fellow who plays Picatara's good friend and manager playing the mentor character. Generally it's held up the episodes I've seen. I think ironically I might like it more than the show I watched every single episode, the previous one, to the point where I can't even remember what the other dinosaur one. But yeah, I just not found the time because there's so much good anime to watch. I'm already watching more than my allocated 6 episodes a week. And it's going to be even worse once October comes around. Going to have to kill some darlings, I think. I may have to convince Dwayne and Niall to not watch Great Pretender Weekly and just do single episodes about each of those arcs. Because that Great Pretender is so good. But by the time you hear this episode, you may know, because this isn't coming out until much later. So there we go. Anything you want to add, Bradley, before we wrap this thing up once and for all? We've talked a lot about wrestling today.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on, to be honest. This was a lot of fun to talk about.
It is.
I'm glad we finally got around to Tiger Mask, who I've always been interested in, but I kind of needed a podcast to finally prod me into kind of learning more about him.
And somewhere down the line, you'll prod me into learning more about Girls and Panzer. I'll talk to you about that after we wrap this episode. Otherwise, you can find me at Twitter on awesome_engine and also on Twitch at Let's Go Brian, where I'm probably playing Yakuza right now as you're listening to this, because when this will be coming out at the end of September or in early October, and I'm trying to finish all of them before 7 comes out on the 13th of November. It's currently looking impossible, so I'm going to give it a try.
5 is a very big game.
I've just finished part 1 of 5 in a week. So if I could do the others in a week, the other parts, I might be good. But I suspect this one, from the looks of things, it may be backloaded with content in that the finale section. Then I've got 0 to do, then I've got 6, then I've got 7. But 7 I can take my time with, because plenty of time before they do 8. Otherwise, we'll be back in the future. The next thing coming up on this feed should be the anime that didn't make us. I'm currently organising that with Gary. And then following that will be another Dynamite in the Brain, which hopefully might have a certain Anthony Askew on it. But I'm not making any promises yet. That's all up on him. Otherwise, please continue to listen to my other podcast, Let's Go. You can also find that on Dynamite in the Brain or on its own feed on your podcast sites. Goodbye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.